We need protein, plain and simple. We need it. And we need protein from nutrient-rich sources. Beef, chicken, and pork are all nutrient-rich, and when cooked are the foods that propelled the development of the human brain. They remain important to our brain health and the replacement of protein in our bodies that continuously breaks down. Cows are an exceptional source of protein. They eat plant matter and then they biopack it into nutrient-rich foods for us. There are approximately 70 million cows in North America. These are large grazing animals that we eat. That's a lot of animals eating a lot of grass and grains and barley. They take up a lot of space and they burp methane. Are they bad for us? Are they bad for the environment? Or are they good for the environment and good for us? Is cattle ranching sustainable?
Over the last decade, the story of cows and the environment has been a hot topic. But the narrative has been focused on cattle's contribution to climate change and the destruction of the rainforest. The idea that cattle could be integral to the health of an ecosystem is a very different story. In order to understand the real impact of cattle on a specific ecosystem, we have to look at the context.
The context is so important. We're not standing in a rainforest, we're standing on the Canadian prairie. And so in that context, we need grazers and we need a livestock industry to keep the prairie, what's precious left of it, where it is. And so in our Canadian context, let's think about what's most sustainable for here.
So what role do cattle play in the grasslands ecosystem?
What happens is the glaciers came and wiped off all the topsoil, so we had no life. There was nothing here. And it grew topsoil down into the soil. I always thought that topsoil grew up and it was an accumulation of something, but topsoil actually grows down into the dirt, and it's just a conversion of inorganic dead rock and silt and sand into actually this dark black life, which is like an Amazon rainforest, but underground, where you have little tiny T-Rex predators, and they're going around and killing other things and prey animals and parasites, and it's a whole complex web underground, an ecosystem that's alive. And by having cattle here, they're creating that life. They're the keystone species in this ecosystem. It was the bison before them, and the bison completely built this into the ecosystem that we have today and built all the topsoil and sequestered all the carbon. And when they disappeared, these grasslands became sick and they needed to have another keystone large herbivore grazing on it.
When a keystone species is removed from a habitat, all other species are affected and some may disappear from that ecosystem or even become extinct. Without the presence of a grazing species on the grasslands, there's a devastating impact on the natural production cycle of the grass.
In the fall, that top growth dies and the root underneath the soil stays growing. But because the top growth has died, if it's not grazed and removed, what happens in the spring is it gets harder for the new growth to grow up through it. So the grass actually ends up starting to smother itself and all of the other species around it. So really, you need to have the grazers on there that are helping to remove and eat off some of that growth so that it can start regrowing again in the spring.
I invited fourth generation rancher Sherry Copperthorne Barnes to join me for this episode of Conversations That Matter, Food for Thought, to ask her about beef and its sustainability. Sherry, thank you for joining me. Where exactly are you located at? That looks like the Rocky Mountains just behind you.
They sure are. We're just situated straight west of Calgary, right along the Trans-Canada Highway.
You have a significant head of cattle behind you. Now, I'm going to demonstrate just how little I know about ranching and ask, is it appropriate for me to ask you how many cattle you manage?
We run quite a few. You ask me how many cattle, I'm going to ask you how much cash do you have in your bank account? So, no, it's...
That's the equation.
We are considered a large cattle operation from a cow-calf perspective.
Now, because you have the scale that you do, because you're a well-established ranch, an issue for so many people is the sustainability of large-scale cattle ranching. And that begs the question, is cattle ranching sustainable?
It's a good question. My family has been here for 133 years. So most people automatically assume that yes, we're sustainable. But the reality is, as much as we love the lifestyle that's here, this is in fact a business too. And it's a business that we have to look at from a little bit of a longer term perspective. It changes out of our control many, many times as well. So to talk about what cattle or beef sustainability is a very complex question. It really is difficult to answer.
Well, there's so many components at play. There's not only the land itself, there's the weather, there's the markets, there's coronavirus. There's so many different things that affect your ability to be able to carry on ranching. Then on top of that, people want to know whether or not your relationship with the environment, with the animals that you manage, is being done so in a sustainable manner. How do we go about measuring that? How do you say to somebody, yes, this is sustainable?
You bet. It used to be that just because I've been here 130 years, that was a good enough answer. But without a doubt, people are wanting to learn more about where their food is coming from and how it's being produced. And so I'd say over the past 5 to 7 years, we've really come together as a beef industry and evaluated. First off, we benchmarked where we were. So we can say, as per 2016, we know this is our impact on the environment, on the economy, and what kind of benchmarking that we would like to have in goals going forward so that we can start to measure ourselves a lot better, because we weren't able to answer some of those questions. It was assumptions that because you see these cows growing nicely and the grass coming up fine, that things were good. But we realized we had to become a lot more technical from that perspective.
When you say we, you're not talking about just you. You're talking about the industry at a variety of different levels, from rancher right through to the retailer. Who are the participants in this working group that can verify or do verify sustainability?
We took a look at it from the ranch to the point where it hits the consumer's shelf or the restaurant. We didn't actually touch into the consumers because that would be a greater area than we'd be able to manage. But we really looked at it from a perspective as who, we looked at it from a stakeholder perspective. Who is involved in this and who would like to have a say in this? Because it's really easy to talk about ourselves, but we got to make sure we're answering the right questions. So we also brought in a number of groups that are challenging us on a number of fronts, both on environment, on our impact in the economy and things like that. So we brought in businesses, we brought in NGOs such as the World Wildlife Fund or Nature Conservancy. But of course, traditionally we have our producers, our cow-calf guys, our feedlot guys, our packing industry, as well as the retail consumers side of it. We need to make sure that we've got the McDonald's of the world, and we need to make sure that we've got the Loblaws and Safeways there, because those are the people that are selling our product, and they have to be comfortable telling our story as well.
That's a diverse group. What does a meeting look like?
The best part is that nobody had been able to do this yet. So we were starting from scratch and there was no example to come by. And so it actually made it a lot easier. We looked at it from a pre-competitive standpoint, almost like you would food safety. And so what we were able to do was to create a dialogue amongst ourselves and in basically storytelling each of our areas. We had to understand what our role in the whole value chain was in order to find out how we were going to come up with improving the things that we were doing. And what in the first couple, 2 or 3 years, it was all about learning the things that you had no idea were happening at the next stages. And so it was a balance of trying to find the science of what we needed, as well as making sure that everybody could tell the same story from start to end. And that's something we hadn't even realized. So it was creating that consistency of language throughout to make sure that everybody could talk about what we were doing comfortably.
I watched a presentation that you gave, and you said there are 72 plus components within this verifiable sustainability structure. Can you give me an example of what a few of those would be? We don't have time to cover all 72, but the fact that there are 72 means that this is a pretty extensive list.
Well, the good news is that we started at that a number of years ago because we figured we didn't really know how to measure what was needed to be measured. And we've honed that down to 26 indicators. And so what those are the key factors that we need to be watching. They're based on the environment as being a big one. How are we affecting the riparian areas? How are the soils? Dust factors. We look at the animal health and welfare because we know that that's an important part of what we do. We look at innovation. We make sure that we're adopting new technologies to make sure we're getting better every year. We look at food safety because all of us are in the food business, regardless if we have the live animal or we're selling the packages across a counter. And the final part that was new to us in the industry, in the production side, was how do we affect our community? How do we relate to the people around us? Are we doing it? Are we negatively or positively impacting the community? And that was a new one for the beef industry to really wrap our heads around too. But that's an important part to the packing side of it as well as the retail side. So we all had to adopt new areas to learn to be able to understand and measure and make sure we were on the right path.
When you talk about verifiable sustainability, what makes it verifiable?
Well, there's a number of ways that can be done. And in order to be able to market it, we have to have a third party actually come in and verify that we're doing what we're saying we're doing. So we do have a checklist of things that we watch for, and we make sure that those things are being, we're able to answer both on paper and take someone around and actually physically show what we're up to. And then it's an auditor that actually will come on site and give us a certificate to allow us to be able to say, yes, we have been third-party verified. Now, you don't necessarily have to go that route either. There is the opportunity just to know a lot of ranches do this intrinsically. They do it just because that's how you manage a ranch. And it's about teaching those guys just to make sure that they've got the information that they need and they're able to also, if they have to present it, they could.
You're part of the entire chain of production, everything from, well, the ranch through to arriving on the plate or the shelf of the consumer.
Boy, where do I begin? Because it is a very complex thing. I mean, the obvious one first is most people think we make our living off the cows, but the reality is that the number one place that I have to focus on is actually the grass, the environment around me, because it's these lands that I create my businesses off of. The cows are basically a diversification of what I can do with the grass and the soil and the water that's available here. And there's no better tool than a cow to take advantage of the lands where I'm at.
There's no better tool than a cow to do that?
Well, basically, we're sitting at 4,100 feet right here. And so to say that you're going to plow this all up and make soybeans for veggie burgers is not going to happen. We're able to take the natural resources that are grown here and turn them into high quality, high nutrient dense protein product food for people. And there's no better or more efficient animal to be able to do that with than possibly a sheep. But I think the grizzly bears might prefer those better than the cows that are around here. So cows are a little better suited for this area.
Well, those are grasslands and they roam around on them. What does it take to be able to manage the land in a way that ensures that it is sustainable, but also is providing the appropriate nutrients for the cattle?
This is land that has been historically grazed by buffalo and elk as well. So all we've done is basically replace the traditional grazing animals, the grazing ungulates, with domesticated cows. And so it's our job to ensure in the days of the history 200 years ago when those herds were going around in the tune of 10,000 head, we now have fences. So we manage the groups according to the pasture and the water that's available. And so we're mimicking what nature did a number of years ago, but also treating it as a business as well.
Okay, here's another question from my own naive point of view, or maybe having been given information that I don't fully understand. I hear people say, well, that land has been repurposed to allow for cattle. But it doesn't look like that to me. Is that an accurate portrayal of the industry when people say the land could be used for other things that would have a lower environmental footprint?
I'll also tell you that the view that you see over my shoulder did not look like this 130 years ago. This land is continuously evolving, and so we have to be careful to not take a snapshot of what you see today and assume that the use is the best for the day that you see right now. With livestock, you have the ability to be as flexible as you need to be with the naturally changing conditions that occur. By suppressing fire, we now have the tree lines that you see behind me. And we've done that as a human race. Cows are just enhancing the areas in between the open grasslands and these foothills that are behind me. And we're able to make sure that we maintain wildlife biodiversity with that, grassland biodiversity. And so we use them as a tool to enhance the environment.
How many months of the year are they out in the field? What constitutes their diet and how do you make sure that they have the appropriate food that they require, especially during the winter when the grass isn't growing?
You bet. Here we have a saying, we're either making feed or feeding feed. We really are either, like the cows are literally out in the field all year long, all 12 months. But we're feeding anywhere from 6 to 8 months sometimes, depends on the weather, depends on the snow, depends on the drought. So we're monitoring, we produce enough feed to make sure that every cow on this place has enough food, not only for this year, but into next year as well, because we have to produce enough feed to make sure we've got the insurance level that there's going to be something for, because you can't predict what this environment's going to do. So these cows will stay on grass, hopefully from about the 1st of June until the end of October, November, and then the rest of the time they're fed.
Wow. Okay. I look at those cows out there and they're eating grass and I hear about grass-fed beef. What other kind of feeding is there?
Well, there's multiple types of ways that you can create a beef product. And it really is up to the biggest difference between the types of meat that you see on the supermarket shelf is a little bit has to do with taste. Grass-fed will take the taste different than a grain-fed product. But it depends on your personal preference. And we're no different than any other business, and we like to create options for folks. And so there's many ranchers out there that are willing to try and produce grass-fed beef. I can't do it because of where I'm at. It's just, there's no way, it's very expensive to be able to create enough feed to keep them on a forage-based diet versus adding some concentrates or grains in order to keep them healthy because they need energy during those cold months. And up here at 4,000 feet in December, January, it's a little cold to do that and can get quite expensive feeding them.
So you say yours are not grass-fed, but aren't I looking at cows in the field right now?
They are mostly grass-fed. My cows, remember, the calves that you see at their feet, the cows will stay here. And so, yes, they are primarily forage-based. And in fact, we raise cattle in the genetics to make sure that that's all they require to go forward. But you wouldn't want to eat one of these cows that are out here right now. She's going to be a little bit tough to eat. You want them to come through a feeding system that allows them to get a little chubby and a little chunky and a little marbled so that the taste comes through and allows that flavor to really come through, and the tenderness is the biggest issue.
So it's not a straight line?
Oh, no, not at all. And there's many options in which you can take, and it depends on the category of the animal, and so there's lots of options that we have to follow.
Maybe you can help me understand something else. I've heard that there are fewer cows in North America today than there were in 1970.
Definitely.
And yet the yield or the production is higher. How is that possible?
That's done through genetic selection. Just as I said, I make sure that my cows can survive these winters on nothing more than a forage-based diet. That is done by producing or selecting cattle that the right genetics can handle the environment that we're living in. And we've learned over the years to be able to select those animals that are much more efficient. And we're at basically 30% better efficient cattle than we were back in the 70s. And so I have records that go back right down back into the late 50s, and they were 800-pound cows that were producing 400-pound calves, and they would finish in slaughter at 700 pounds. So, I mean, now we're talking 1,200-pound cows that are producing steers that will finish out 1,500 pounds. So, I mean, we now know how to do it in a much shorter amount of time, and the genetics that allow those cattle to grow, we've been selecting that very successfully over the past 20, 30 years.
As you look forward to the future in this industry, do you see it remaining strong and being an important component first in our diet, but then also economically for Western Canada, because that's where you're based?
You bet. I mean, from a diet perspective, there is no better, more nutrient-dense product than beef. There really isn't for the environment that we are in here. And going forward, we have an industry that, like many other industries in Western Canada, is definitely questioning the economics behind this because we're constantly being challenged. But as we face those challenges, we're learning how to demonstrate our ability to do what we say we're doing. And I think, and I hope that those folks that really think that beef production is such a negative impact on our society, they take the time to really understand what we do and come out. There's many of us that are willing to talk about it and show you firsthand. We're not going to say that to be a vegetarian is the wrong thing. We all believe in choices. But just make sure that as you put one commodity against the other, you fully understand the differences, because this is a good industry. And this is an industry that's needed in this area to maintain the carbon sequestration that goes on, or to really help enhance biodiversity here. You need these ranches as an environment when you're fighting climate change more than you realize.
Expand on that a little bit. How so? I'll tell you that I bumped into a viewer of my show and I told her that I was looking at the relationship between cattle and the environment. And what I told her was that what I'd been reading demonstrated that there was basically a net zero environmental footprint, especially from the carbon perspective. She literally scoffed at that. She went, "Oh yeah, right." So what do you say to somebody who comes into this discussion going, "I don't believe it"?
It's a difficult conversation to have, because the science behind what we do at the ranch level is there isn't any. And it's very, we've been at this since 2016, really trying to figure out year after year how we're improving, or where the areas that we need to focus on are. As you can see behind me, this environment is very, very complex. So to say, what if you were to look at the hill directly behind me and do a carbon sequestration examination there versus what happens in the forest that's 40 miles west of us, or even 5 miles south of us, every one of those is going to be completely different. So the unfortunate part is we don't have the science available to us to be able to really say what the true impact of these of a ranch is. But we do know that when you take averages of carbon sequestration, what happens on these grasslands, we know that we're sequestering anywhere from 30 to 80 pounds of carbon per acre. And this ranch is over 15,000 acres in its total landmass, not all ours, but in what we operate on. And you can start adding up those numbers and you realize the potential of what we do to sequester that. Now, if we were to break this up and plant crops on here, you lose 30 to 40% of that ability, simply because we know carbon sequestration, the deeper the root complex goes, the more sequestration that goes on. So therefore, in grasslands that the roots are 2 to 3 feet deep in soils in a lot of places, they can sequester a lot more carbon than a crop that's only got roots that are 6 inches, maybe 8 inches max. So there's an argument that can be made, and that's just the tipping point. We don't even know what the full the capacity of this place is yet. So give us a chance before you want to turn us out because we're a very small component of society and an easy one to pick on. You might realize that the unintended consequence of getting rid of these cattle might be something that society can't handle.
It's a bit frustrating to have people make assessments about an industry that they really haven't been able to dig deeper into the data, isn't it?
That's right.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to give us these insights and share with us what it takes to ensure that the cattle industry is sustainable, not only economically, but environmentally as well.